in Seattle, Seattle. And you need to buy yourself a home. We'll be right there for you, because we're the realtors that you can trust. So go to RodandConsidDow.com.
Don't go anywhere unless you want to. It's the Ron and Don Show, starring Ron and Don, and sometimes me, at ronanddon.com.
Hey, you guys, what's going on? Welcome to episode 703 now of the Ron and Don Show, and we are live in the Les Schwab Studios.
What is up, Ron and Don Nation?
Hey, coming up on the Ron and Don Show, we're going to talk about celebrity rider requests. In other words, what does Taylor Swift want in her dressing room, or how many dressing rooms does Maroon 5 actually need? Yeah, we'll talk about that. That's called a celebrity rider. I think some of it will blow you away, and also some of it's pretty funny. And ultra-processed food. It seems to be about 80% of the American diet. And is it killing all of us? Yeah, before we get to that, though, let's get to this. It seems like money dysmorphia, Ron, has become a real issue, especially when people look on social media and see other people that seem to be living a better life with more cash in their pocket, right?
I found this to be a fascinating story, and it's a brand new term, and it's kind of thin slicing a dynamic that happens online. So you may have heard of body dysmorphia. So what body dysmorphia is, it's a mental condition, like anorexia is a great example of this. No matter how thin someone gets, when they look in the mirror, they see themselves as needing to lose weight. And so the medical or the psychological term for that is body dysmorphia. What you see is not the reality of the situation. And so for the anorexic, it doesn't matter how much weight they lose. They still see themselves as someone that is overweight or needs to lose some weight. And so they've transferred that concept now onto money, and they call it money dysmorphia. And it's this phenomenon where doesn't matter how much money you make. And so you'll look at someone online or you look on social media and you'll see a person that's on a private jet, or they're on a mega yacht, or they're taking a fancy vacation, or they're having a really nice meal, or they just bought a luxury item. And so you feel like there is no way. You can't see the reality for what you are in your mind. There's never enough. And so it's sort of been around for a long time, this, keeping up with the Joneses or whatever you want to call it. But I like the term money dysmorphia, because I think it takes us into the psychological part of this, where we've all said, oh, I want to compete with, your neighbor gets a new car, and so then you get a new car. But I think this dealing with it or thinking about it inside your brain is something that is a new way to think about it. How do you deal with not trying to keep up with the Joneses, or not comparing yourself to the people next door or down the street? Or is that something that you don't struggle with at all?
Yeah, I don't. If you look at the majority of wealth in this country that's been transferred, those are the people that have the yachts and the really nice cars and burn through mom and dad's cash. My friends that have actually built their own wealth and created this wealth snowball, they all drive old cars like I do, and those cars are kind of bought and paid for. One of my friends has two pairs of shoes. There's a pair of shoes that he wears to spin class, and then there's another pair of shoes that he just wears for everything else. And he's worth millions of dollars. So I've been lucky enough to be around people that have made their own money, and they kind of live like the rest of us. I think actually I don't get jealous. It kind of challenges me when I see people living experiences, right? And I see some of my friends now that are in retirement, and they've done a really good job at saving their money. And some of them are doing nothing with it. And it's like, hey, man, you here you are toward the ass end of your life. You have a little bit more time. And then at some point, it's going to be a heart attack. It's going to be cancer. We just know it's going to be something, right? Or you're going to die of natural causes, like they always say. And it's like you have these minutes and moments. And so to me, it's about experience. And I don't think I have experience costs money. a lot of times. Not all do, but sometimes they do, especially if you're going to travel. So I think for me, sometimes I will look at things and say, wow, I'm really not having the experiences maybe that I'd like to have. And I don't get jealous from that. I get challenged by that. So for instance, you know, next Friday, we're going to go get my son's passport. He's 13. I didn't have a passport till a couple of years ago, and I'm going to be 57, right? I didn't really get in a plane, I don't think, until I was 19. And we traveled mostly on trains when I was younger, or we just traveled when I was really young. We traveled around in a travel trailer. And there was something kind of cool about that, too. So I think now that air travel is for everyone, that you can go online and you can see the other experiences that people are having, I don't get jealous. I actually get I get challenged by that. And then I also... It's kind of cool. For instance, before I did the enchantments, you're able to go up and see people that have done the enchantments and how they did it, the challenges, the way they packed their bag, the things they took. I find that to be really helpful, but I'm not jealous. I'm challenged. What about you? I Anthony Bourdain, when I look at the life that he lived and the places he went, I'm challenged by that because he went through this depressive state and he ended up taking his own life. I choose to look at him the way he lived and not the way he died. And his experiences, I think he opened up the world to a lot of us to say, wow, you can grab a backpack and there's some really cool things out there you probably never see. And you may only see those once and you only have your health one time. So get after it, right?
I mean, I sense it sometimes where if I compare myself, you know, whether financially or possession wise, you can go, oh man, like I wish I had that. And then I quickly will reset and go, dude, you're doing pretty well, all things considered, for the population of the earth. The thing I've been thinking about a lot lately is called the hedonic set point or the hedonic treadmill. And that's the concept that we have of you get used to the level that you're at, and then those things begin to not be special anymore. And the example they always give is if you're very, very hungry, you haven't eaten in a long time, you could have a cracker, and that cracker would be the greatest thing you've ever tasted, and it would be absolutely delicious. If you're used to eating certain, you know, luxury foods or whatever, day in and day out, meal in and meal out, they lose their luster, they lose their specialness. And so some of the Stoic philosophers and even modern day philosophers have methodologies for you to reset that hedonic set point, to reset your gratitude so that you're not constantly just going, this isn't exciting anymore. I'm not thrilled by this experience anymore. So you do things to help yourself experience it. Like for instance, I was up in my tiny house last weekend and the water pipe burst. And so all I had was 5 gallons of water. And so, but I wanted to stay there. I had a friend coming up. Eric came up and saw me. Then we were going to do a campfire and we wanted to have dinner. I didn't know the pipe was burst. And so I had to really concentrate on, all right, how am I going to use this water? This is all the water I have that's potable. And of course, I could go down to the river and get more water, but you can't drink it. And so it's like, okay, in a sense, when I got back home after that and I'm able to turn the tap on, I'm like, that's great. Like, this is amazing that we have water that just comes out. I know that's a very stupid example, but it gave me such a thrill to be like, wow, I can take a shower for 10 minutes. I can turn the water on and it just comes out. Because I just spent an entire day going, if I run out of this water, my experience is over. And so those sort of things, if you put those in your life, will reset you. And so the Stoics always talked about, you know, once a week or once a month, sleep on the floor, sleep on the ground, and then you'll appreciate your bed. You spend one night on the floor, you appreciate your bed. You spend one weekend where you only have 5 gallons of water, you come back and you experience and you appreciate water.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. You do a water fast, and let's say you go 24 hours and don't drink water. And there's people... I read about this football player that practices Ramadan, and when you're in the practice of Ramadan, you can't eat or drink anything from sunup to sundown. He'd be doing 2-a-day practices, and I believe he played for the Carolina Panthers. And so, what would that be like when it's 101 degrees and this is when they would still practice outside, right? Or you're playing games outside. And he said he really appreciated food and water at the end of the day. And he said it tasted tremendous because you go all day without it. And I have to say, in my own experience, sometimes with an intermittent fast, that first meal that you have after you've been fasting,
this is the greatest egg ever.
It really is, though.
Right, it is.
It is the greatest egg. Or if you have done some water fasting and then you take and then you taste that water, or if you're out on a hike somewhere and you run out of water and you come back and that first glass of water really is amazing. For a lot of people, that mountaineer, when you're climbing and they get to the top, if you go up to Mailbox Peak or the top of Rainier, when you open up that Rainier beer or that Coca-Cola or that energy drink or soda water, whatever it is that you prefer, it really tastes amazing. And I think in our culture sometimes, if we will learn to do without, we'll appreciate things more. So we will see you on the other side of this. Hey, you guys, I got some exciting news. Now through March 2nd, they're having their Founders Day sale at Les Schwab. Who's Les Schwab? Well, you know, they sponsor this show. You know, they do a lot of great things in the community. In fact, this Thanksgiving, raise a lot of food. And during the holidays, yeah, raise a lot of toys. Thing I love about Les Schwab is he loves the community. He's been doing it. In fact, instilling their family values since 1952 in all our communities, 70 years earning your trust. Right now, the Founders Day sale. It's a thank you to all the customers out there. Get this, you can save up to $150. That's right, $150 when you buy a set of four select tires. And all you got to do when you go in is say that Ron and Don sent you. All right, for that location near you, all you need to do is go to LesSchwab.com. That's LesSchwab.com. Les Schwab, let's say it together. They've been doing the right thing since 1952. All right, so this is how real estate works. I'm at a Seahawks game, and I'm watching the Seahawks win the Super Bowl, and I'm in my friend George's seat, and I'm sitting next to my friend Mike Martin. Known Mike now over a decade. He calls me the other day, says, "Hey, I got a tech friend. He's in Hawaii, owned a property in Green Lake. He's going to fix it up. He went to Hawaii. He said, I'm never going home." So he's had this rental now for 10 years. His name is Jude. So Mike puts me in touch with Jude. Jude calls me and says, "Hey, I got to sell this house." I call Scotty. We go over the house, and this house has a foundation problem, has a roof problem, has lots of problems. And in order to fix this house and bring it to market, it's going to take about $100,000, and then the house is going to be worth about $925,000. Anyway, there's a builder that Jude knows that says, "Hey, well, I'll give you $835,000. And then there's a neighbor that says, "Hey, I'll give you $850,000. And then what I did is I got on the phone with one of my builder friends, because again, I don't like seeing homes torn down, but there's some that have to be torn down when they have bad foundations, right? And this is a home that has to come down. This builder said, "You know what? I'll pay $1,060,000 for that particular house." So, case closed. There are builders right now paying more for properties than people are willing to pay when they step in and say, "Wow, this thing has a bad foundation. This thing is still in oil. This has a bad roof. There's a lot of work to do here." So while many homes I like to see restored, some can't be, right? So when you need us, if you have a piece of property, if you have an old home that has a bad leaky roof, lots of deferred maintenance, call us. Because sometimes the best thing to do is to fix it up and bring it to market if you have the funds to do so. And sometimes the best thing to do is to create a new property and reimagine it. Because guess what? Here in Seattle, yeah, there's not a lot of property just laying around. So when you need us, whether it's wholesale, retail, investing, buying, selling, let's sit down. RonandDonSitDown.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the Ron and Don Show. Don't forget, the springboard is hit here in Seattle, and we are out writing deals. We're out showing houses. We're out buying, selling, investing. People are reaching out. Let's do a Ron and Don sit down today. And don't forget, on the Friday edition, we're going to talk more about the NAR lawsuit and what that means for the way that we all buy, sell, and invest in real estate. And do you even need a real estate agent? And are real estate agents overpaid? We're going to talk about that on the Friday show. So make sure you're listening this Friday, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday when the show drops. We talk about all the things we've talked about for 30 years on terrestrial radio. And then on Friday, that's the real estate only edition of the show. And we're going to have some pretty amazing reactions to that story. And I think probably some things we'll share that might surprise you. Hey, let's do this. Let's talk about riders real quick. And I'm going to read some riders here in a moment. Ron, what is a rider?
A rider is when a performer is coming to town and they basically say, hey, when we arrive, these are the items. This is what we expect to be there when we show up. So let's take, for instance, a musical performer. They're going to come to play at the Climate Pledge Arena, and so they're like, "Hey, you're Paul McCartney." Everybody in the band is vegetarian, so all the food backstage, they will give you what they would like to eat. So it's like no meat products, whatever. So that will be in the rider. So if they show up, Paul McCartney shows up, and there's fried chicken in the guest room, he knows that they completely just disregarded his
rider. Yeah, sometimes what we noticed when we were involved in radio and entertainment back in the day, especially we did Top 40 radio, We noticed that we would see some of the riders when Julio Iglesias was coming to town and he was playing at something that our radio station was sponsoring. 104.7 CCP, Arizona's hit music channel, on Jack West Mornings. So they would put something deep in the rider that was ridiculous, like we only want green M&Ms, because they want to actually see if you actually read the rider.
Well, that's
right?
The famous Van Halen example. Van Halen back in the day wanted a bowl of M&Ms with all the brown M&Ms taken out. And it became this thing of legend of what a diva David Lee Roth was and how ridiculous this was. And David Lee Roth subsequently came out and spoke about it. And he said the reason why that was in there is when we were touring, it was the biggest show that a lot of these cities had ever gone to, because they went to a lot of medium-sized markets. And he's like, what we needed to know, because we could get electrocuted. The first part of the rider was all about the electrical and gear requirements of the show. And so it's like they needed a certain amount of electricity. They needed to have these type of speakers. It needed to be grounded in a certain way so that when David would touch the mic, he wouldn't get a jolt of electricity. And so he said, if we got into the dressing room and the brown M&Ms were not in the bowl, then I could be pretty confident that they paid attention to the part where I'm not going to be electrocuted. If I got into the dressing room and the brown M&Ms were still there, then I had to send my tour manager out to check every single item about the electricity and about the safety aspects of the show. So it was a Trojan horse or a marker for him. They didn't care about the M&Ms. What they cared about is that that venue was paying attention.
Yeah. If you read the book, and my son is reading it right now, listen to it on Audible or read the book. It's called Storyteller by Dave Grohl. I read it and gave it to him. And initially in their rider, and of course he's the drummer for Nirvana and now the front man for Foo Fighters. In fact, he invented Foo Fighters. He said back in the days of Nirvana, in their rider, it was just like, I need 20 pack of smokes and I need a bottle of whiskey and whatever beer they were drinking. And they would pick really cheap beer because they were just used to picking cheap beer. And then they decided it would be fun to get socks. And so they would all order different types of knee-high socks that they wanted. And they just thought it was amazing that when they went to the dressing room, there was the beer. Because they toured for years,
right,
in other bands. And you're hauling your gear in and out, and you're sleeping in the van, and you're bumming a cigarette out of the garbage. And they would just blow them away that there'd be 20 pack of smokes, not 19, not 21. And that the beer they asked for would be there, and the whiskey they asked
Champion
for.
Champion tube socks.
And then the tube socks. Yeah, they love that. So anyway, there's a couple here. Beyonce, she requests a hotel room. It has to be at 77 degrees Fahrenheit. There also has to be a full buffet, and there can't be Coca-Cola. They say the cost of that is $10,000. The reason there can't be Coca-Cola is because she has a deal with Pepsi.
Some of these items are interesting. The way they price these, I think, is ridiculous. So unless that's the nicest hotel room you've ever seen, I don't know if that costs $10,000. But a lot of singers want a certain temperature for their voice.
Yeah,
I don't think that's rare if your instrument is your voice to want a certain temperature.
Celine Dion, when she travels, and of course she has this crazy, crazy autoimmune disease right now.
Yeah.
I feel very sad for her. and she can probably get this. She requests a private jet, and then there has to be 75 first-class hotel rooms for her production team. They say the cost of that is about $350,000. And that's probably true, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and she did her residency in Vegas. So, like, if you're going to get Celine Dion to come out, then that's the price you pay.
Cher wants a separate hotel room for all her wigs, $20,000.
That's what I don't agree with. What hotel room is $20,000?
I don't know.
That's not a thing.
What's that? Oh, sure.
I mean, you probably could spend, but let's say you're in Pittsburgh. Is there a $20,000 hotel room in Pittsburgh?
Well, most of these bands get a whole floor.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I hear you.
So I would say $20,000, it'd be a lot more for a whole floor. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'd say like a presidential suite, sure. That could be $40,000,
$50,000. I've never stayed in a presidential suite.
You don't travel in the president. Yeah. Mary J. Blige, this is probably true. She wants a new toilet seat at every place that she goes. That's $5,000. Will Smith wants a two-story trailer for filming. And I think I actually saw Sylvester Stallone when he was filming a movie here out of Sandpoint. I was delivering a car in my 20s that they were going to destroy in the movie. And
The Assassins, I think, was the name of the movie.
And he had three trailers. One trailer was all his workout stuff. The other trailer was just his day trailer where he'd hang out with his dudes. And then he had another trailer where they would pull all this gear out. And he loves to golf. And it was all his golfing equipment. And they would set up like a three-hole golf course for him when he traveled. They did that out at Sandpoint.
I think that's reasonable when a guy is making hundreds of millions of dollars for a studio.
Yeah. Barbara Streisand, a police dog, has to check the premises before her arrival. They say that's $20,000. Prince has to, he would only stay at a house. And the house had to have five bedrooms. So he would not stay in a hotel. Prince wanted to stay at a house. I don't know if I believe this. Mariah Carey, maybe I do believe this. An assistant to throw away her chewing gum. She did not want to touch her gum.
Probably just an assistant. The one I loved, and I saw him talk about it. Ricky Gervais has this thing when he goes to a venue, he wants it to be guaranteed that all of the doors, the hinges are lubricated. Because he's like, if I'm on stage and people are going in and out of the doors, go to the bathroom, or the hinges are squeaking. He goes, it takes me out. He goes, that sound a squeaky hinge, because it reminds him of a thing in his childhood. Yeah. He's like, it takes me out of the moment. I can't perform. And so people would make fun. It's like, come, quit being a diva. You want them to lubricate all the hinges in the entire like Royal Albert Hall? And he goes, yes. He goes, if you want me to give you my best performance, all of the door hinges need to be lubricated.
Yeah. George Clooney likes to have a basketball court and then a beach cabin built next to his trailer.
I like that.
He likes to have a beach
cabin. I like George Clooney.
He likes to feel like he's on the beach. Tom Cruise, he has to have underwear that's specially made for him. They say it's $5,000. And they say, for example, Tom Cruise insists on having an arsenal of specially designed underwear woven from a specific fabric to maximize his comfort and flexibility during his stunts. And they say that he goes through lots of underwear when he's doing all his stunts. That's probably true.
Well, it's probably one item out of his whole contract.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there are many things in the Tom Cruise
contract.
Madonna
doesn't have to have the toilet seats changed. She just wants them cleaned four times a day.
I'm sure she had some horrific incidents in her coming up era that made her want that.
Yeah. And let me see, find one more here for you guys. I think this is true. Knowing that Britney Spears is from Louisiana, and the fried chicken down there is very good, right? 6 cases of Diet Coke and 10 pieces of fried chicken wherever she goes. That's probably true.
It seems pretty reasonable. Do you remember the time we got backstage for the Grateful Dead?
Yes.
And we thought it was like, oh man, this is going to be like people dropping acid and it's going to be people getting stoned.
It was at Memorial Stadium.
We're like, this is going to be crazy.
And when we went out to Memorial Stadium, like down on the floor of Memorial Stadium, it was crazy. And people were driving, and it was all kids spinning around. Then when you look up in the stands, it was like their parents and boomers up there with tie-dyes on, and they were on their flip phones, because this is back in the day during flip phones, doing business deals, right, with their BMWs parked out in the parking lot. Meanwhile, the kids were still out there in the VWs that maybe their parents handed down. And then we went backstage. We were very disappointed.
We were thinking, preparing ourselves, girding our loins, if you will, on how bonkers it was going to be. It was like a Disneyland family picnic back there.
Yeah.
It was like just bottled water.
Water and chicken breasts.
It was like
daycare for the kids.
It's like, where's the crazy drug culture with the dead?
Yeah. I will say, when we went backstage with Metallica, to see those guys in their warm-up rooms is really incredible. And I know that James, he finally just went through a divorce with his wife. But back in the day, when she found out that he was cheating, she made him go to rehab. And then wherever he was in the country, he had to fly home in a jet every night. That was part of his rider. So like when we were in Louisiana, we introduced them. He was getting on a jet that night, flying back home to California where she lived. The rest of the band stayed there and they moved on. But it was very, very interesting that when you went backstage, it was a lot of chicken, water. He liked to have a place where he smokes his cigars. And then they all had warm-up rooms that were pretty pretty incredible. And then they had massage facilities in those warm-up rooms as well, which their performance is so physical. I could see why before Lars went out there and got on that drum kit, you probably want to get a massage before and after.
If you're an established act that's playing like basketball arena level performances, it's a grueling life. And I don't begrudge anybody for these relatively reasonable items.
Yeah.
Like I think I just really talk about Rihanna wants certain, you know, drapes and tapestry and candles. It's like, why not? Like, she's living in a bus and then in a dressing room, like and she's Rihanna. Like, yeah, at least have it be comfortable.
You want to make it feel as normal as possible. And then I think even everyone that you employ, not only in that arena, but you think Taylor Swift, she travels with over 120 trucks. But I remember the night that we went to see Kid Rock in Grand Rapids. That show was still, I think I counted 47 semis. So
yeah, it's a big production. A lot of people moving in and out of there. Now, obviously, there are some people that abuse the rider thing, and for people that don't work in that industry, it's easy to lampoon it. But most of that stuff on there, minus the Mariah Carey thing, if it's just an actual human being that all they do is do the gum, like, I'm sure they do more than just the gum. Yeah. But it wouldn't surprise me if she spits her gum into someone's
hand. Rock has to have his motorcycle delivered, and then he rides his motorcycle out in the parking lot and says hello to everyone before he actually goes in the venue, which I think is pretty cool. So
that was cool.
He likes to ride his motorcycle around and say hi to people. So, hey, you guys, we will see you on the other side of this.
Hey, it's Ron and Don here with Mitch Weeks. You know him better as Mitch.Loans. Mitch, you have a really cool new product for investors. I think it's kind of the first I've ever heard of it.
Yeah, so we have a great new investor cash flow program. And what this is we take the house you are buying and we inspect it, not you, the borrower. And so what we do is we look at the house and we say, will it cash flow? If you put 20% down, will it make more money than it's going to cost you to keep paying off your mortgage? And if it does, it's yours. It doesn't matter what you make on your own. It doesn't matter all these other things that we usually have to document. They don't matter. They're gone. It's just, does this house make sense? And if it does, you can buy it.
All right. So you can go up to four units on this. And Don and I have never heard of a product like this. It's pretty exciting if you've been wanting to get into the investment game. So go to Mitch.Loans right now. Set up a time to talk to Mitch. See if you qualify for this new program. That's Mitch.Loans.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the Ron and Don Show. Again, if you need us, just reach out, ronanddonsitdown.com. And we can sit down today and meet you wherever you're at on your real estate journey. And the market is really taking off here in Seattle right now. So if you need our help to buy, sell, and invest, we're going to sit down with Nancy, I think, on Friday. And we just sat down with my friend Alex the other day, and we sat down with Tom just a few days ago. So folks, it is busy out there. If you need us, we love to be your advocates and your friends. And we also said goodbye to Team Hathaway the other day. That's the thing. We get attached to you guys and then you leave us. That's kind of a bummer sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, it's bittersweet because someone's realizing their dream. They've been planning this adventure for a long time. They're going to get a nice payday from their house. But then, they then go away.
Yeah, it's one thing when someone's coming here and they're buying and we get to see them. Like, I know you're getting together with some of our buyers here, and you guys are doing, what are you doing? You're doing a sake tasting or something like that? Is that right?
Yeah, it turns out my neighbor upstairs from me is the number one sake expert in town.
Wow.
And so I approached her and said, hey, will you coach us up on sake? So we booked this really cool little Japanese restaurant bar place, and I'm going to learn. I know nothing about sake.
Those are people that came here, right? So we get to hang out with them because you guys all become our friends. But for the ones where we list their house and they move away, I went to see the Hathaways the other day as they're pulling out of the driveway with their dog Riley. It was a little sad. I do have to say it was very funny. I was taking a picture of them and Riley was in the background. He was still marking the grass after 30 years. Did you see the picture?
I did. Yeah.
Of him taking a poop.
Of course.
Right behind
that's his yard.
I wasn't even trying to get that picture. And I'm like, man, perfect.
Gotta day love, in the life.
Yeah. Gotta love, you gotta love 12-year-old Riley. So, anyway, ultra processed food. This is kind of interesting. I don't even think this takes a new study, but a new study out says ultra processed food may be causing things like cancer and anxiety. I do have to say, in my own journey about ultra processed food, I stopped eating ultra processed food a long time ago. But if you're a parent out there, and when your child's young, every child starts off with chicken nuggets. I'm really amazed at the parents out there that can get their kids, you know, eating carrots and kale salad when they're very, very young. Like our friend Kanan, his kids have always eaten well, right? Mm-hmm. They've always eaten. My son ate well when he was younger, and I could get him to eat vegetables out of the garden and things like that. But then when you have to start packing lunches or when he would be in other places.
I've heard of families that they will only eat like pasta or mac and cheese.
Yeah.
Like 7 nights a week.
Because your kid doesn't end up crying. It's cheap. It's easy to throw away. It's easy to fix. Sometimes it can be real finicky, and you can spend a lot of money on the good stuff, and then they don't end up eating it. And then what you find is you have to find a roadmap. At least I had to find a roadmap, and we started doing this a couple of years ago to get away from the ultra processed. And in the meantime, as a result of that, he never went up. People are like, what happened to your son? He looks great. I'm like, well, he started working out, take care of himself. He hit puberty. And by the way, he doesn't eat ultra processed food. Even last night, we always eat whole foods as far as fruit goes, organic foods as far as vegetables. And even on a burger night where we're having a smash burger, we still make sure on the plate that fruits, vegetables show up that haven't been boiled to death. And typically they're whole and great and good. But it's been a journey. It's been a journey to get there. And it's also very expensive. Ultra processed food is just, it's easy. Even though you look at some of these burger places now, though, people are beginning to complain when they go to McDonald's with a family of four. That can be a $40 or $50 bill as well.
The history of this in America is really fascinating to me because this goes back to the middle of the 20th century, where, and you might remember this when we were kids, there was a real fear in the world that people were just going to starve to death, that the population of the earth was growing at such a pace that we were going to see mass starvation. And so do you remember that growing up? Like, you'd see all the time there would be stories about mass starvation happening in the world. So the world collectively looked to America and said, you guys are the light on the hill. You need to develop some technology and some ways to feed the world. And so America took this seriously.
We called Michael Jackson. Yes.
And so we started to prioritize with farmers in America, the yield was the only thing. How much yield can you get?
Wait, feed the world. Was that Michael Jackson?
No, that was the guy from Boomtown Rats. Let them know it's Christmas time.
Yeah, okay.
And so I'll think of his name in a minute. Bob Geldof.
Okay.
And so,
what did Michael Jackson do?
They did as a different.
Was that Hands Across America?
Different thing. Yeah. Let's not go down
he
that road.
He wrote that song though.
So we'll spend all day trying to figure that out.
Okay.
So, it in the United States, it all came about yield, and so we maximized and prioritized how much we could produce, and then the government started to subsidize farmers to just do one thing. And so they wanted you to just do soybeans or just do wheat or just do corn. And the more acreage you would dedicate to a monocrop, the more you would get in government subsidies. The higher your yield was per acre, the more you rewarded by the United States government. And so the U.S. government started to stockpile all of these food staples, and then we were exporting it around the world. So we would export wheat. We would export soybeans. And that became a feature of us to basically not starve the world.
We are the world, USA for Africa. So similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And and so the byproduct of this is that we, as a society, we created an infrastructure where you just had these certain crops. So now we have all of this wheat or all of these oats. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
And so corn, what are you going to do with it?
Lots of soybean.
And so then the food industry in America basically had access to cheap ingredients. So like, okay, we have tons of grains. We're going to make cereal out of that. And then
sugary cereal.
We're going to add, we're going to take corn syrup, reduce that to sugar and add that to the cereal.
Yeah.
And then now we're just going to pump this into the food chain. So the evolution of it made sense. And it's not necessarily the farmer's fault. Like if you wanted to survive as a farmer, you had to fit into this USDA program.
Do you think these food companies though, because they know now, like food
now
companies
know
now that they're creating addiction and sugar addiction and carbohydrate. That's why when you eat a Pringles, you cannot eat one.
Once you stop, you can't pop.
Well, it's true though. You want to eat the whole can. When you open a bag of potato chips, even if you put the potato chips away, your mind still wants to go back there. That's why I can't have potato chips in my house. And I eat pretty, I would go, even when I'm packing for my son's lunch, if I'm going to put potato chips in there, I go to the store and I buy the very small bag of potato chips. I don't have 12 bags here in the grocery aisle that you buy at Costco because I'd eat 11 of them. I would. Right. I would eat all 11 bags.
So, because the food scientists have hacked the brain and they know it's salty and fat.
Did they know then, though, when they were like, hey, we got to do something with this corn. We're going to make corn syrup. Corn syrup goes in, and if you're wondering, there's processed food and then there's ultra-processed food, right?
Right.
And some food has to be processed.
Of course.
But when you look at ultra-processed food, that's the stuff right there that causes addiction. And in my mind's eye, it causes cancer, anxiety, all the things that we're talking about. And all you got to do, if you wonder if it's ultra processed, look at the back label. And if there's a bunch of things that are mentioned on there, number one, you've never heard of. And number two, it's not in your cabinet, and you don't add that to your own food. That's ultra processed food. That stuff to me can be dangerous if that's all you're consuming.
When you maximize for yield and profit and you live in a capitalist country, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You just have a company that it's their job. General Mills' job is to make money for their shareholders, not to feed you the most nutritious food. And that's why I think when you do travel and you do go to a country like Italy, let's say, or Spain, where they're not prioritizing yield, they're prioritizing flavor, or they prioritize nutrition, or they prioritize diversity, and you eat that food, you're like, why is this food so good? And why is it so inexpensive? Because that's built into their culture. Their country's government is not, standing there and whipping farmers to do more, 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 more. They're saying, make it good, make it nutritious, make it taste good. And people care about different things. So yeah, it's hard for me. There are certain things that I will crave. I just had some Pringles. And you're right.
Oh.
Me and Eric shared a thing of Pringles around the campfire, and we ate the entire sleeve of Pringles. So you're right on that. And I'm really working hard to, when I go to the store, I buy a bag of green beans and I figure out a way to eat the whole bag of green beans.
Yeah.
And so it's like, this is a bean. Yeah. I know what it looks like.
Right.
I'm going to eat this bean. It has the only process it has is to take off the thing and put it in the bag.
Yeah.
And so, but again, it's more expensive. And many times I'm standing there at the fridge going, not going, man, I'm really craving some string beans right now. You know, like last night I was like, oh, I want something sweet.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like, I'm going to eat the string beans.
Did you eat the string beans last night? When you what did you do?
Last night I had some peanut butter with a little bit of honey in it.
That's okay.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Peanut butter's good for you.
Yeah, it was. But that was how I.
And honey's good for you.
I did that craving.
Yeah. And the other thing is, when I used to drink a lot of alcohol and it kills my inhibitions, that's when I'd really want a burger fries and
like you said, there's nothing wrong with a burger every now and then.
No,
it's just when you do it on the regular that and stay away from it's really hard when you go to the grocery store. Let's take bread for example. You can buy that artisanal bread and you turn over the label and it is flour, yeast, salt, and water, and you know it's going to be good. On day three, you got to throw away the rest of the loaf of bread. Where, you know, if you buy that processed, you know, bag with 78 ingredients on there, you can have that loaf of bread for 2 weeks and still use it. So that's the thing I think that you struggle with as a family when you're trying to budget for this stuff.
Totally.
But the science is in. The more ultra-processed food you eat, the bigger percentage of that is your diet, the worse your health score is going to be. Period.
Hey, you guys, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ron and Don Show. If you need us, just reach out, ronanddonsitdown.com. He's Ron Upshaw on the social medias. He's very active on Instagram and Facebook. Find me, Don O'Neill, over on Instagram. Very active on Facebook as well. If you don't have our newsletter, we send that out to about 6,000 people. It's called The Nation News. Just something personal going on in our lives. Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it's something we're learning in real estate. We don't sell your information. We send it out once a week. And we also will send out some podcasts maybe that we've done that you haven't heard about that we love, maybe a particular episode that was 20 episodes ago. And we'll say, hey, make sure you check out this podcast. So if you go to ronanddon.com, you get signed up for the Nation News, find out more about our real estate business. And also you can find out more about our radio backgrounds and this podcast that has just about 2 million clicks now. So thanks for that. We really appreciate it. And we love sitting down with you, hearing about your real estate journey. And if we can't help you, we'll find somebody that can, okay? Don't forget, we sell the sound. So we just sold a home up in Edmonds. We've been writing some deals here on Queen Anne. We came in second yesterday. I hate coming in second. Been shopping up here in Loyal Heights in the Ballard neighborhood and getting ready to do some inspections. Just did an inspection down in Federal Way this Friday. Going to do an inspection over in Port Orchard. So we are here to help. We sell the sound. Hey, for Ron, myself, Paul, our producer, Charlie the dog, here comes my sound to luck us out. My son to lock us out is what I was trying to say. You saw that ultra-processed food, you guys. You've been listening to The Ron and Don Show only on the Ron and Don Radio Network.
Now keep your head up and your shoulders back and keep blowing that trumpet and we'll see you next time.
Only.
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 Only
on the Ron and Don Radio Network.